But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crown queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to the Advice Show from CityWire, where we dig into the ideas, insights and industry shakeups driving the world of financial planning. This is Jack Gilbert, the editor of NMA, and my guests this week are my team of esteemed journalists, and we're going to run through some of the big stories that they've all been working on in the past few weeks. So we have Julian Bovell, seasoned reporter, is here.
Good afternoon.
Not your first rodeo, Julian?
No, it's not. No.
But we have two debutants, actually. Two newbies to the NMA podcast world. So Victoria Pavlova and Madeline Anderson.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for joining me. Your first time, how does it feel? First time in the studio?
Good. A little nerve-wracking, but good, I think.
Excited, shaking.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm pleased you're nervous. I'm pleased.
Yeah.
This is high-pressure stuff. Well, look, thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for coming in. And the first time of many for both of you, I'm sure, videos and podcasts. Maddie, I'm going to start with you on this one. And the story we're going to talk about today, I think, is an interesting story you had about SS&C Hubwise and anti-money laundering.
Yeah. So in June, we basically heard that SS&C Hubwise were looking to restrict their unverified accounts from the 1st of this month, so July, as part of their anti-money laundering moves. What this basically means is that Hubwise are going to restrict clients' accounts if they can't provide extra details required by SS&C. And they're going to block transactions on ISAs, GIAs and SIPs primarily. And additional details could be things like copies of passports, further evidence of where they live, that kind of stuff. SS&C first changed its AML policy at the end of 2024, moving away from a reliance on others model. And basically what this means is that under reliance on others, a platform would depend on advisors to complete checks on end client identities.
So it's kind of like relying on the due diligence of the advisor.
Yeah, exactly.
To say this client is not like, is not like a Russian oligarch.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
Hopefully not. And then the platform wouldn't kind of do anything additionally on top of that. But now they're moving to reliance, and basically this means that a platform does do its own due diligence, even if an advice firm has done so themselves. And again, it's to prevent against AML, fraud, that kind of thing. When I was talking to people, I heard that while the FCA hadn't said kind of anything explicit in writing, they far prefer the reliance... they don't like the reliance on others approach, and they want platforms to do additional scrutiny, just partly because they think it's kind of more safe. And then when we contacted the FCA for a response on this, they said that AML was really an area that they were focused on at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, so I think we have definitely heard, there's been a few other stories where we've seen the FCA kind of focus around this kind of financial crime.
Yeah.
AML area.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Victoria Bell, your predecessor, she got a story about the FCA kind of focusing on this area with platforms a couple of years ago. But then we also had, I guess, Rathbones.
Yeah, so I was talking to someone earlier and they said that, to kind of be fair to Rathbones, that Rathbones are under 166 at the moment. This contact suggested that one of these reasons was financial crime, kind of AML related.
Yeah.
But
they said they were going to stop taking on high risk clients.
Yeah, exactly. But they did also say that across the industry, AML, financial crime is an issue. And so it's not just kind of like that Rathbones are, say, uniquely bad in this. There's a few sort of poor players potentially in this area.
Does anybody know how much money is being laundered through?
No, that's a good question. Maybe that's a good follow-up story to this.
Tens of billions or as in?
Like, well,
I don't know, to be honest. I'm not sure on that. But it does seem pretty widespread. So I don't have a figure, but it's definitely something that the FCA are looking at. Compliance people are looking at.
I mean,
well,
I think the FCA, they've been big on banks and anti-money laundering.
Yeah.
But the last couple of years, we've seen it more so kind of in the wealth management space, them drawing attention to it.
Yeah. But with SS&C, so these kind of verification and ID checks were introduced for new clients who are joining Hubwise. But that was from last year. But Hubwise has added these kind of additional checks for clients who signed up to the platform before the new policy was introduced as well. Yeah, exactly. And when we spoke to Nick Wright, who has quite a long title, he's Global Head of SS&C, Global Investor and Distribution Solutions.
That is a long title.
Yeah. He told CityWire that the move kind of followed a rethink about who's responsible for a platform's kind of legal risk, and they wanted to basically be extra extra safe in this area. So introduce this move.
And I'm right in thinking that most platforms are using this kind of non-reliance model where they're not relying on...
So most are not just relying on others, but there are also some who are kind of almost going halfway. So Martin Jennings, who's CEO of Parmenion, he told Citywire that while his platform does use a reliance on others model, it's now kind of working on lower level extra checks, like say an AI tool to link data sources like Companies House, the FCA register, client questionnaires, into more of what he called like a compliance health check. So it's not completely shifting the model, but it's making sure there's a bit more safety as well. So there is definitely people being more aware of the risk involved in just relying on other people, and they're putting in that work to try and have a bit more safety themselves.
Interesting stuff, Maddie. I'm sure that you'll have some more reporting on this issue, and it might even be that advisors may have to start doing more checks. Or,
well, one advisor kind of suggested to Citywire that this could involve quite a lot more work for them.
but maybe it's a necessary
bit of extra work. But definitely something that I think we'll be covering more in the future.
Interesting stuff. And moving on to a story that's, I guess, completely separate. I can't really think of a connection or link at all here. But it's a story that, Victoria, you've been working on, which is the latest kind of private equity-backed sale that's in the works, or one of the latest backed private equity advice firm sales, which is of a business called My Pension Expert, which is kind of up for sale, is in a sale process. Victoria, so can you tell us about what is going on here?
Yes, so an upcoming sale, which we've been covering since April. My Pension Expert is a Doncaster-based advice business with 1 billion in AUM, roughly, and 25 advisors as of beginning of this year. And its backer, Palatine, is set to exit. We understand that there have been meetings since April, and an official bidding process was launched in June. The thing that makes this story interesting is that MPE is seeking a valuation of 16 to 17 times its forward-looking EBITDA of 30 million, which would put it at around a 500 million valuation.
Wow. I mean, when we're doing the story, it does seem like it's a big valuation for a business this size that's kind of having like 25 advisors. To me, it does. I mean, we've had some choppy sales recently. Obviously, we've had, I guess, Amber River sold this year for a big valuation. Evelyn NatWest was the other big deal this year, which sold for 15 times. For kind of 16, 17 times earnings, does seem like a big multiple to me, Victoria. What have people been saying about the story?
Valuations are not often made public, obviously. But from the network, we kind of did hear that this is outsized. This is significant. There have been a few deals in recent years in the kind of 14 to 15 times EBITDA multiple range. From the contacts that I've been speaking to, M&A experts mostly in the advice space, they have been saying that the kind of average deal value that they have been seeing is somewhere in the 10 to 12 times EBITDA multiple. I spoke to a senior leader at a large consolidator recently who said that they would aim to not pay more than 10 times an EBITDA multiple for an average acquisition. But there are factors in a business that would kind of tilt that metric upwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think with My Pension Expert, we heard that they were kind of on this quite fast growth trajectory, and they were getting a lot of kind of leads online through a lot of digital advertising marketing and things. So I guess that maybe is kind of feeds into this maybe higher valuation that we've seen with other
businesses. So part of MPE's kind of unique sales proposition is the fact that they target smaller pot clients and have a much higher ratio of clients per advisor than average. They are a telephone and video-based advice service, so that's what kind of affords them the ability to do that.
Exactly.
So that might make a business like that more attractive. One of the contacts that I spoke to said that it really, beauty is in the eye of the beholder with these things. So if a business provides kind of the exact right puzzle piece for a consolidator, for an acquirer, be that something like a unique proposition. People mentioned a really, really kind of solid grip on the business's data, so being able to provide numbers on kind of a moment's notice with a 24-hour turnaround, the right regional coverage, or a book of clients that is kind of easily transferable to an acquirer's in-house investment proposition. Mm-hmm. Those were the things that Contact said that they would that would tilt the scales in favor of a higher valuation.
You're going to get a big valuation these things, definitely. Interesting stuff. And actually, I mean, a subsequent story you got on this, Victoria, was that an analyst note from UBS, which noted your story and said, if this level is achieved, we believe this would be lead to positive read across for other businesses, including St. James's Place, trading at a low teens, 12 times monthly forward earnings multiple. So, I mean, that's obviously, showing that potentially this could see other, advice businesses which are trading on lower multiples, the listed ones, kind of revised up and maybe affect the market a little bit.
Yeah, so it does seem to be a case of rising tide kind of lifting all boats in this case. EBS did mention SJP specifically. In a separate analyst note, they did mention that SJP trading could be impacted by the kind of influx of AI services entering the sector.
Which is a big thing this year.
But it does seem that the sector is somewhat fickle, and seeing a kind of larger valuation for a firm of MPE size could even impact some of the kind of bigger fish in the pond.
Interesting stuff, Victoria. Well, I think the mention of SJP means I'm going to manage to segue this, even it is quite kind of incidental, onto the third and final story, which we're going to talk about today, which Julian, seasoned reporter, you're going to discuss. So those of you who have looked at the site and read our stuff, I'm sure will have seen news around some departures from St. James's Place in the last few months. So yeah, Julian, what is going on? What's the latest with this?
Well, I mean, firstly, to say they you can't keep SJP out of the off the pages, can you? But so over the last few weeks, there have been sort of more stories emerging that some big SJP partner practices are exiting or are looking to exit. So it was reported last week or the week before that a business called Sovereign Wealth Management, which is one of SJP's largest,
I think it is the biggest practice,
which has 3 billion in assets under management. Half of its advisors would be going to Soderbergh, I think was reported.
Well, I think it was reported that the whole firm might go, but there might be some kind of ambiguity there.
They haven't been deauthorized on the FCA register, have they?
Yeah.
Which created a whole load of panic in the market. Their share price dropped by 10%. It did rebound.
I thought it was 7%, was it?
Dropped by 10 and then rebounded back to 7 by the end of the day, which will cause concern inside any business, but I think particularly there. And then this morning, we reported that a business called Prospera, who are based in Sheffield, and another business called Wellesley were also set to depart. Interestingly, both of those businesses have been deauthorized. Jefferies put a note out, I think, on the back of our story, actually, which said that...
Moving manless notes here, Jeff.
Yeah. Which said that altogether, those three firms, they think, contribute between 5 and 7 billion in assets under management, which isn't a small amount of money, obviously. But perhaps quelling some panic inside SJP, that analyst note did also say that there's a potential that some of this is just noise, and that the issue isn't as widespread inside SJP.
Yeah, well, they said Jeffrey said they spoke to SJP and they told them that that they thought their advisor numbers would be flat this year.
Yeah. And what their advisor numbers actually dropped ever so slightly last year. I think
there was a slight
18
dip, yeah. Which is very unusual, and I think...
But Mark Fitzpatrick had said, in fact, to you, I think, in the other studio, that they were doing a productivity review, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the kind of messaging which they've used to kind of frame some of these departures around. I mean, there's been some kind of skepticism from other analysts and people that is the real kind of driver here. I guess what is interesting is to say is that this is really new. Like, SJP haven't really seen this level of, they haven't seen large firms leave before.
I mean, we wrote a story last year on its succession, whether SJP had a succession crisis. And I'm reading it, the top line for that story now, which was, there was a saying within St. James's Place that it was the best place to grow your advice business. And clearly, whether it's a loud minority or a silent majority, that is being called into question by some of its advisors. And it's important to note that lots of these advisors, they're not retiring. It's now an arms race. Quilter and Soderbergh at the moment are the two that are circling.
Yeah.
Big time. Soderbergh, it should be noted, we understand, are the firm that are taking on Prosper and Wellesley. And some of the sovereign advisors as well.
Yeah, they certainly seem to be.
And
really,
Jack, you've done some work on why Soderbergh's offer.
Well, I mean, Soderbergh's thing's interesting. I guess what we have heard and people have been talking a bit about is that Soderbergh buy out minority stakes in firms. I mean, that's their kind of model, and I think we've heard they've been doing that with some of these SJP practice firms. There was another firm called Porter Financial, which came across last year, who's quite reasonably sized. And I guess the kind of attractiveness of that model is that, you know, SJP advisors, a lot of them have large debt piles, both the firm sometimes and the individual advisors. And if you're getting paid however much from this minority stake from Soderbergh in this equity stake, you can obviously use that to pay off those debt levels if you've got them. So I think that's potentially one of the attraction points. I mean, the other thing that's quite interesting about this is David Bellamy, the former SJP CEO, is now on the board of Soderbergh & Partners, which is kind of an interesting connection, although it's difficult to say how much of an impact that
he manages to. He managed to exit. Former colleagues might find it harder.
So that's an interesting connection here. But at the moment, it certainly seems to be Soderbergh is the one that is being most active in recruiting SJP advisors.
Well, certainly being the loudest in trying to do so, I think.
And I guess the question is, you know, how much... You know, are we going to see some more departures? When is this going to end? And obviously, that's going to crash the business is dealing with.
I think the big issue that lots of advisors have is that, certainly ones that I speak to, is that plenty, I think, feel that they've reached the end of their time at SJP, but that they're locked in by the debt, basically. Yeah. And if you owe someone money, they have leverage over you. Frankly, that's the...
It's been kind of the thing that's been for years that SJP have managed to kind of have this walled garden of making it hard to leave. And I think the firms and advisors who are leaving now are obviously going to have to still pay for the debts they've brought up with SJP. But it is, there are departures. I guess we don't know when it's going to end, how many firms are going to leave. And the businesses have $220 billion of assets as well. It should be said. So, you know, I think, you know, even if you're losing kind of $3 billion here, $2 billion there, and often those assets, something that Jeffrey's made a note of, you know, they're not going to come instantly away. They're going to take a while to come across, if they even do come across. So it's not like they're losing a huge amount of assets. I guess it's more of a kind of, the fact that this doesn't look great, does it? You know, if you're losing big practice firms.
No, I think you can dress it up however you like, but businesses don't want these sort of stories out there, I don't think. And they'd rather that firms like Prospera or Wellesley or Sovereign, however much of it is leaving, were not leaving the business. They'd rather keep those assets under wraps. And you said that $3 billion here, $2 billion there, but it adds up eventually, and it's a drip drip until it's not.
And I guess the interesting question for me is what SJP and CEO Mark Fitzpatrick do to try and stop more departures.
Well, as I mentioned, he's doing the productivity review. There have been some suggestions from people commenting underneath our story actually that this could be a chance for the business and its advisors to sit down and sort of restructure how it operates its model. So as people listening will probably know, SJP has a thing called the business sale and purchase scheme, which is like a kind of standard marketplace dynamic pricing, I suppose, where demand is high, price is high. If demand is low, price is low.
Where advisors can sell their client bank.
Sell their client bank, yeah. And it's sort of dependent on if, so if I have a client bank full of sort of 80-year-olds, my client bank is going to be, in theory, cheaper than it would be if I have a client bank full of 40-year-olds who are still sort of growing their assets, right? The issue that lots of advisors have with this scheme is that SJP themselves set are the arbiters of how much a client bank costs. And but basically the business sale and purchase scheme has ground to a halt. Nobody's buying, nobody's selling.
Well, I mean, I think they did say that there are, they did, to SJP's credit, they did say there was, I think, about 220 or 200 transactions last year.
Yeah.
So there are still transactions.
But it's not the thriving souk that they would want it to be.
Yeah. I think that is kind of quite fundamental here, isn't it? Because you know, like all businesses, SJP is an advice business and you need a succession plan.
Yeah, you do. And like all advice businesses, it's employee base. I mean, that's a sensitive word with SJP and lots of advice businesses, but its advisor base is aging. They're not getting younger.
Yeah, self-employed advisors.
Yeah. They are aging. So they need people to come in and service the clients that otherwise they will go elsewhere.
Yeah, well, interesting stuff. I'm sure there'll be more to come on this subject, both from yourself, Julian, and the rest of the team. I'm sure we'll see more stories to come in this area. So on that note, Maddie, Victoria, Julian.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for joining me. I'm sure we'll be back again soon. And thank you very much for listening, everyone.
But today is VE Day. The war is over.
The crown queen waves from the Belfry.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.